Nikola Tesla died on January 7th, 1943, in the Hotel New Yorker in Manhattan at the time. He was in room 3327. He was on the 33rd floor. Interesting, isn't it? Immediately after Tesla's death, Tesla scientific papers vanished from his hotel room in the Hotel New Yorker. Tesla papers were never found. Tesla papers contained scientific data and information about death rays, which could be used for military purposes. In 1947, the Military Intelligence Service identified the writings about the particle beam contained in the Tesla's scientific papers as extremely important. Military intelligence services of the USA, Germany, and the USSR were vitally interested in Tesla's death rays. The current beam weapon program is probably what he was working on. He was also working on energy, free energy, lots of things from Nikola Tesla. He died, and he took it all with him. Or did he? In a moment, our guest will be Mark DeMuha as we talk about the life of Nikola Tesla. Mark DeMuha is the son of a Los Angeles Police Department narcotics detective. This aided in his early interest in the science of investigation. Mark has been a religious educator, missionary, and student of theology, and he joined the military, and due to an injury, his career came to an abrupt end. He then had the opportunity to attend college on the GI Bill and took some film classes. It was at this time that he and a lifetime friend decided to pool their efforts and resources together and begin the journey of writing the feature-length film, The Tesla Conspiracy. Over the last 3 years, the combination of Mr. DeMuha's investigative skills and Mr. Finley's research and analysis skills have resulted in the discovery of what they believe to be a far-reaching conspiracy to suppress free and clean energy technologies. Mark DeMuha is currently in the final phase of his film production education as a member of the Cinema and Television Arts Department at California State University in Northridge. He's our guest on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm pretty good, George. How are you tonight?
Good. You have at least decided to research and film a most fascinating individual, have you not?
Possibly one of the most interesting people of the last two centuries.
Beyond just what I read about his death in 1943, Mark, tell us about Mr. Tesla.
Well, Nikola Tesla was an interesting character, aside from all the things that he did in the world of science and engineering. Going back into his earlier life, we discovered that he developed kind of a neurotic personality, I guess you could say.
Like all of us, right?
Him a little more so. And I think it's particularly relevant or related to the fact that he felt responsible for his brother's death.
Oh, really? Now, how'd that happen?
His brother, his older brother, at the age of 12, was given permission or the right to ride a horse that their family owned. And Nikola was jealous of his brother's being able to ride. And playing a childish prank, he shot a rock or a pea at his brother's horse from a pea shooter, which resulted in his brother being bucked off the horse and breaking his back, which later led to his death.
So he had to live with that all his life.
And when you look at his life, it's kind of indicative, you know, he was a rather obsessive-compulsive person, specifically in the areas of numbers. He was completely obsessed with the number 3, or any derivative of there, specifically the number 27, which is, of course, the cube of 3.
Well, that's kind of funny, too, because the room was 3327 that he was in. I guess he picked that on purpose.
One would suspect.
Yeah.
It seems to fall in line with the patterns that he followed throughout his life.
Okay. Then that's an aspect of his life, Mark, I was not aware of, this obsession, this compulsion with numbers and what they all meant.
Well, and it's his obsessive-compulsive nature extended to other parts of his life. He was very fearful of human contact. And quite often he would refuse to shake people's hands and blame it on an injury that he had gotten in the lab.
Was he a germophobic type guy, or he just didn't want to, you know, deal with people?
Initially, I don't think it was a germophobia situation, but later on in his life, he started demonstrating some of those germ paranoia symptoms.
Like Howard Hughes?
Yeah, he tended to wash his hands excessively. He really had a problem with human hair. for some reason, and nothing has ever been written about it. Or he was not a very open person.
No.
He had a particular aversion to human hair, especially women's hair.
He just didn't want to be around it?
We really don't know. We just know that he had mentioned to some of the people that were closer to him in his inner circle, and he specifically, you know, mentioned or made it known fact that he was aversive to human hair.
All right. Now, he was about 87 when he died, right? Right around there?
Yeah.
So he lived a long, long life. Born in, where was it, Austria-Hungary at the time, in that area?
Well, the political divide at the time was Austria-Hungary. That was the political schism that he was born under. But it was either the town of Lika or the town of Smiljan in what is now Croatia.
Okay. So he was Serbian. I guess you would call him Serbian today, right?
Well, he is documented as being the son of Serbians.
Okay.
His father was a Serbian Orthodox minister, and his mother was a housewife, but rather an inventor herself.
Well, when did he, Mark, start dabbling, do we know, in you know, the electrical, the magnetics? When did he start playing around like that as a scientist?
Well, as a scientist, it really didn't start until he attended university. And it had been his goal or his dream from an earlier point in his childhood to go to school, but his father had wanted him to follow in his footsteps and go into the ministry of the Orthodox Church. And he had a really bad bout with cholera between the ages of 16 and 17, and he kind of conned his father into, "Dad, if I survive, can I go to university?"
So it was one of those, "Dad, I'm dying, please, if I make it through this," and, you know, whatever.
I don't think his father expected him to make it, honestly.
Really? Okay.
From what I've read and from what I've seen, it was kind of one of those deathbed things where, "Yeah, sure, son, you can go to school." And then he got better.
Well, when did they come here to the United States?
Well, Nikola Tesla, the funny thing is what brought him to America ended up being what was his demise. He originally graduated from the electrical and mechanical engineering program that was offered at the school in Graz. It was the Polytechnic School in Graz.
Okay.
And when he left school, he initially traveled Europe between Paris and Germany, working on direct current generators, trying to make a living. And then he ended up coming up with an idea for an alternating current motor.
Was he well known there at the time?
Well, he was, when you say well known, I don't necessarily know that he had any type of celebrity status, but he was known amongst the inner circle of people that worked in electrical engineering.
And I guess they respected him.
Well, he was respected enough that they continually were able to find him work.
All right.
And then while he was in Budapest, he had, I guess you could say, an epiphany. And the way he described it in his autobiography, he specifically said it came to him like a flash. And he scratched out a design in the sand before him, and then he memorized it in his head.
What was the design of?
It was the design of the first alternating current motor.
It just came to him like that in a flash?
These flash experiences had plagued him as a younger man, and he always viewed him as a curse. Even though some of these flash experiences had the opportunity to save him when he was a younger man, he'd always worked really hard to kind of push them out of his psyche. But this moment, this flash came to him, and he realized that he had something that was revolutionary.
No doubt the guy was a genius, Mark, right?
Well, beyond anything that most of us can comprehend. I mean, his very thought processes are baffling to most people, even that of people with scientific training.
I mean, he has, a lot of people might not know this, more than 700 patents.
And he may have been related to a total of 1,200.
My gosh, I mean, these are some of the things I just know about, and then I want you to jump in and tell me what are the big home runs maybe in this list.
Well,
the telephone repeater, right? The rotating magnetic field principle, the alternating current system, induction motor.
The induction motor is probably, of all the things that he did, probably had the greatest ramification on humankind.
All right, we'll talk about that. The Tesla coil transformer.
Second most important thing, Tesla coil.
Wireless communications, radio, fluorescent lights, and then a list of other things. But you think the induction motor was his home run?
Well, I say home run when it comes to the relevance to the rest of us on the planet Earth. Because if you consider at this time, 80% of the planet runs on alternating current.
True.
There are very few places you can go now where you have to bring a DC adapter when you travel.
Without Tesla, Edison wouldn't have done what he did, right?
Actually, when Tesla came to the United States at the age of 28, and it was around 84.
Okay.
He came with the intention of coming in to meet Edison. He really kind of viewed Edison as kind of a god of the electrical engineering
community. Really? So he wanted to meet him?
No, he revered him. He was actually afraid to meet him because he didn't think himself of the same stature and caliber as Edison until he finally met him and worked with him. And that's where the schism happened between Edison and Tesla. And part of the problem was that Edison was one of those trial and error kind of guys. He didn't have a formal education. And so his idea of inventing and developing was, let's go into the lab and bang our head against the wall night and day, night and day.
Right.
Tesla, on the other hand, was more of an intuitive mm-hmm. engineer, and he was classically educated. So as a result, they didn't kind of groove together in the beginning. And then the thing that really tore him apart, and this is going to become a theme of Tesla's life for the rest of his life, and it was money. Because Tesla went to Edison and said, hey, I have an idea for this induction motor, this alternating current. And Edison's like, you're out of your mind. I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, and I could see what happened.
What happened was is Tesla was not daunted in his relationship with Edison at that point.
Uh-huh.
What he wanted to do is prove to Edison that he was a man about business. And
right.
So he offered to take all of Edison's direct current engines and get 25% more efficiency out of them.
And what Edison do?
Edison said, you know what, if you could do that in this certain amount of time, I'll give you $50,000.
And
not only did Nikola Tesla get it in the time frames that were established by Edison, but he got more than a 20% increase in the yield of these direct current motors, which Tesla didn't even really believe
in. Did Edison give him the money?
Nope.
He stiffed them?
As a matter of fact, the irony of it is that, I don't know if it's irony or not, but he says to Tesla, and this is a quote, that was just a joke. And when you've been here in America long enough, you'll understand American jokes.
Oh.
So he kind of tried to play on that you're a dumb immigrant angle. And a lot of Eastern Europeans were treated kind of heavy-handedly that way.
Mm-hmm.
With stupid. I mean, I'm Polish, and so you know how we got it when we came to the U.S. it wasn't 30 seconds after he said that Tesla resigned.
So, but they were working hand in hand.
And the kind of the joke of it is that Tesla and Edison held one great quality in common, and that was they were both workaholics. They both got 2 to 3 hours of sleep a night. The rest of the time, they were in the lab.
I mean, Edison was a genius in his own way.
Edison was kind of the working man's genius.
Yes.
Edison was the kind of guy that would go out, look at a problem, and then put this here, put that there, let's try it again, and he would work the problem out.
And he was an opportunist.
He was an opportunist, and he was a guerrilla capitalist with very, very few morals.
Right.
He was definitely looking to do the same thing any of the other robber barons did. He wanted to create a monopoly situation where he controlled all of basically power production at the time in New York and then eventually across the United States. And that was indicative of him with everything he did, including the film business, which is what pushed the film industry out west.
Oh, that's true.
Because he
made it easier for
every single bit of action. Every single filmmaker had to pay him a royalty because they were using his cameras.
Well, he sounds like a little entrepreneurial guy. He had a better idea. It's almost like Bill Gates with all these Windows applications. I mean, the guy was smart enough to invent it. He should be paid for it, right?
The only problem with the comparison between Edison and Gates is that Edison went as far as to kind of get into that mafioso use of muscle situations.
Did he really?
Yeah, he crashed and burned a couple of movie sets.
You mean he just hired some goons to do it?
Hired thugs. They went in, they busted the place up, and said, you should pay your dues to who you got money going to.
All right, did he ever rough Tesla up?
No, Tesla was never really a victim of any type of physical violence that I'm aware of, that I was ever able to extrapolate from any of the literature.
Okay, so he just broke ranks with Edison and went on his own way?
Right. As a matter of fact, he left Edison rather quickly. And, I mean, we're talking in a matter of weeks, one of the most brilliant and gifted men of this century was digging ditches to stay alive for a dollar a day.
Oh, my God. The Tesla coil transformer was used, I believe, in the Philadelphia experiment, where they tried to make a Navy ship disappear.
Project Rainbow.
Yep. And I don't know if it was successful or not. We've had some wild guests on this program before, Mark, that talked about what went wrong but his technology was there. And also, I do have to, with so much to talk with you about with Tesla today, but I do want to ask you about what happened to those scientific papers that vanished from his room. What do you think happened?
Here starts the conspiracy. And I say it's a conspiracy because a conspiracy is merely a group of people in some sort of position of power using that power to prevent or force somebody else to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And we are almost positive that the people that absconded with Tesla's materials were either with the FBI or the Central Intelligence Agency or the agency that became the Central Intelligence Agency, which would probably be the OSS.
All right, so he's living in this hotel, New Yorker. First of all, why isn't he living in a house or something, or is this not unusual at the time?
Well, the thing about Tesla is as great of an engineering and engineering genius and a genius of physics, he wasn't a very good businessman, like so many other creative people.
Okay.
And he actually, because of his good nature, basically tore up a contract between him and George Westinghouse to help George Westinghouse stave off J.P. Morgan in a takeover. Because J.P. Morgan wanted to take over the Westinghouse company,
mm-hmm.
just like GE had taken over Edison's company.
Okay.
And and Nikola Tesla was owed a great deal of money by Westinghouse for royalties off the alternating current motor. And that financial obligation would have left him vulnerable to takeover.
So
in just a show of goodwill and a show of friendship and loyalty, he said, yeah, tore up the contract, said, you don't owe me. But again,
it could have been worth a fortune.
Well, his patents alone, the ones that he sold to Westinghouse, he sold them for $60,000, of which...
Which was big money in those days.
Yeah, well, if you consider the rate of inflation compared to what it is today.
And he just basically tore up the note?
He tore up the note for the royalties. And the thing is the initial cash that was given to him by Westinghouse, which was around $60,000, more than 70% of that went into build his infamous Grand Street Laboratory in New York.
Yeah, he put a lot of it right back in again.
Right back in.
Okay, so anyways, he's living in this hotel. He's got all his papers and documents up there, right, in this room?
Well, what papers and documents he kept, he was infamous for memorizing things and not keeping documents.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
He did keep notes, and when he was working, he had an assistant, actually. This is kind of a funny anecdote. He had an assistant that was very perturbed by the fact that Tesla didn't keep notes. And Tesla would work himself into into almost stupors, you know, fugue states where he would black out.
And nobody would know what to do.
Well, he'd become so fatigued from working from so many hours. And so he had an assistant who took it upon himself to go down and file patents on behalf of Tesla, because Tesla wouldn't file the patents sometimes.
All right. So they just looking out for Tesla had to do this.
Yeah. And the thing is I think some of these assistants, whether they be well-intended or not, ended up causing what would inevitably be the end of Tesla as a preeminent force in the engineering community, because he had, from the very beginning, started talking about free energy. Because later on in his life at the Montauk Project up on Long Island, he was talking about broadcasting free energy to people. And, you know, I got back to J.P. Morgan, and he shut him down. Because J.P. Morgan, for a time, was a very powerful financier behind Tesla's work.
Let's talk about that when we come back in a moment, Mark. And also let's talk about the death ray, because the current beam weapon program indeed could be originated from Tesla's death ray technologies. And let me ask you when we come back why Tesla, a man, good-hearted man, would even consider conceiving a death ray. What was the purpose? We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, the clock is going to tick now for the end of Perfect Possession. I don't have the end date, but I know it's ticking. Perfect Possession, of course, it's on Exorcisms, Art Bell's interview with the late Father Malachi Martin, available to you when you subscribe or renew your After Dark newsletter. Couple ways you can obtain the CD, which, quite frankly, is worth equally that of the newsletter. Call 1-888-727-5505, 1-888-727-5505, or go online at Coast2TO, coasttocoastam.com. Tesla claimed of having invented a death ray capable of destroying 10,000 enemy planes at a distance of 250 miles. In 1934, Time magazine wrote an article about Tesla's ray, saying last week, Dr. Tesla announced a combination of four inventions which would make war unthinkable. One of them was a beam that, according to Tesla, would drop an army in its tracks, bring down squadrons of airplanes 250 miles away. And then he went on to talk about some of the things that he would do. Do you think Tesla was trying to avoid war, Mark? That's why he was coming up with these ideas?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, Tesla inherited a loathing of war, and he inherited that specifically from his father, and I think that kind of comes with the territory that they grew up in.
So his plan then is not to create war, but to stop it.
I think this is what you could call the precursors to the concept of MAD, mutually assured destruction.
Mm-hmm.
If our gun is so big that it will wipe you out and your gun is so big that it will wipe us out, we'd both be fools to get into it with each other.
This death ray, is it a laser or was it something else?
I guess you have to kind of step backwards to kind of get an idea where he's coming from.
Okay.
His first attempts at projecting electricity would probably be the Colorado Springs days.
Tell me about that.
Nikola Tesla realized that he couldn't do what he wanted to do in New York City. And he had got some financial support to move out to Colorado Springs area. And in the late 1890s, he erected a tower. And the whole purpose of this tower was to send a massive charge of electricity into the ground with the intent of transmitting electricity to another point where it could be used.
Okay.
And what he got back was, what happened was, is he put somewhere near 10 million volts of electricity into the ground. And according to his estimations and the estimations of the people that were there, that charge of energy traveled through the earth and rebounded back, and resulted in what was possibly the largest example of man-made lightning ever.
Oh, okay.
To the point where there were blue auras surrounding all the metallic objects. In the town of Colorado Springs, you had people walking by fire hydrants and being electrocuted.
Oh my! The whole place was static.
The whole place was lit up, and I think that's what really got it in his head that he could, because before he believed that there was a limit to the amount of electricity he could both draw and transmit. From this individual experiment, I think he got the idea that there was no limit to what he could do.
So he wasn't really thinking of death ray. He somehow stumbled into it.
Well, yeah, he stumbled into the concept of transmitting electricity, and the concept of the death ray he actually did approach world powers right before the outbreak of World War II. And they were the Allied powers. He was no friend of the Nazis by any stroke of the imagination.
Right, right.
But he went to the U.S., he went to the English, he went to the French, and said, I have this thing that will avert war. And of all the Allied powers, the only people that would give him an ear were, well, you guessed it, the Soviet Union.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So
were they building this death ray with him?
He received payments from the Soviet Union for some consulting and for some design specs. From that point on, I haven't been able to find any specific involvement with their construction. I do know that they went at least 2 years into the program because he got paid around 2 years after he first introduced the concept to him.
Do you think this concept would have worked had he lived?
Well, the thing about it is I think we have evidence that it did work.
Because that's what they're after. They were after those papers. There's no doubt about it in my mind now.
Well, if you look at specific events, in 1901, Tesla, now under the financing of J.P. Morgan, established the Wardenclyffe Research Facility in Long Island.
Okay.
And it was at Wardenclyffe that he started building this massive edifice, this massive tower. And originally he had asked J.P. Morgan for like $1 million, which again back then is an astronomical amount.
You mean to build the tower?
To fund the whole project.
Okay.
He only gave him $150,000. So the project, I think, was kind of doomed to begin with because I think he was reasonable in assuming how much money he would need.
Right, underfunded.
Right. And so J.P. Morgan started getting worried about this project because it was escalating. And then Tesla comes to him and says, well, I have this idea to transmit electricity to whoever wants it pretty much free of charge.
For free,
Well, that's when J.P. Morgan pulled out. Well, some years later, in 1908, supposedly, and I've read some documents that support this, and I've read some that argue it, but he returned to Montauk, to the Warren Cliff research facility. Mm-hmm. Actually, he was accompanied by a fellow by the name of George Scherf, I think is how they pronounce his name. And supposedly, now this, mind you, you think of the dates here, this was June 30th, 1908. What other event happened in 1908 of magnificent proportion?
Is that Tunguska?
Tunguska got blasted.
Yep, Siberia.
And that's the same day that he's purportedly tried to shoot an electronic beam to the tundra where somebody was making a trip to the Arctic Circle, and he wanted to use them as a reference point to say, yeah, we saw this.
We saw this, exactly.
But he ended up overshooting and undercalculating the actual strength of this transmission, and some believe that's what happened.
It's something.
They never found any physical evidence of a meteorite or a...
No, they never did.
They never did, so it's plausible.
Well, it is ironic that it would happen at the same time that he was turning on this machine.
It would lead one to believe.
And aiming it out there.
Yeah, it was in the same general direction. And if you, I mean, I'm sure if somebody went out there and shot the azimuth and actually took the time to plot it, you might be surprised on how close it lines up if you consider, you know, if you consider on a map.
So he was, he's dealing then with two things almost simultaneously. I mean, he's working on trying to get free energy out of the atmosphere, I guess, right? And then, of course, he works later on with his death ray technology. But again, we're using what's out there in the atmosphere. We're using this power in the universe that he somehow was aware of.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, too, because I was listening earlier and you were talking to somebody about HAARP.
Yes.
And about the use of HAARP to affect the atmosphere. And some people have said, well, maybe Tesla was involved with it. Well, the HAARP project, as we know it, which is the high-frequency active auroral research program, HAARP, is based on research that was done in 1958 under the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA. And there was a project called Project Seesaw.
Seesaw.
And Project Seesaw was a specific answer to the potential of Soviet buildup of particle beam weapons. They abandoned it after like 3 years and $30 million. Well, at least that's what they said to Congress and to the American people.
See, it probably went black ops. It went undercover. Got to have.
We have HAARP now, and we also see some remnants of Seesaw in the 1970 Strategic Defense Initiative.
In anything you looked at, Mark, did Tesla also play around with weather manipulation at all?
Tesla didn't he didn't himself manipulate the weather, but he did postulate that it was possible, say, to superheat a certain position in the night sky and give the same effect as you would see with aurora borealis, basically lighting the night sky for, you know, I guess a baseball game.
Yeah.
But he did mention, or he did say, or he did state in some of his work that weather manipulation was a possibility. He also stated things like time travel were possible, and when we found out through our research that he was one of the initial lead engineers on Project Rainbow, a.k.a. the Philadelphia Experience, things started coming together.
All right, let's talk, if we can, because he started this first chronologically,
right,
about his push to get this free energy device. So he builds this tower. J.P. Morgan, who's supposed to fund it, basically underfunds it. And why does Morgan back out?
I think Morgan backs up because from the very beginning, he had suspicions that Tesla was kind of moving in this.
Did Morgan have his eyes on making money with electricity and energy?
To be honest, I think this, and this is my opinion, and I'm sure there's somebody going to argue this opinion with me, but it's my opinion that J.P. Morgan got him in a situation where he could get to a certain point, then he could say, sorry.
On purpose,
give him the boot and get somebody else in there that could reverse engineer it or finish the project without them having the same ideology as Tesla.
I see. And he might have had that guy, that scientist, already in the wings.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's not something that we couldn't expect from J.P. Morgan. He was definitely a power-hungry man, by his own admission.
It seems like in Tesla's entire life, somebody was always out to screw him up.
I think what it was is everybody was looking to make a buck off of him.
Right.
Nobody really gave a rat's behind what happened to him.
Yeah.
In the long run, I think he was always viewed as this really cool, really bright, expendable commodity.
Okay, so Morgan backs out. He's got this tower, what, partially finished? I mean, what happened to it?
Well, the official pulling of the plug happened in 1905.
Okay.
And then he went back in 1908, according to certain records, and went ahead and did his little thing, which after he did and realized what had happened in Siberia, said, we need to take this down now, because I think he realized at that point the magnitude of destructive power of what he was doing. And if you think about it, if you look at what happened to Siberia, that impact dwarfs any nuclear detonation that we have ever done.
Oh, it was huge. Absolutely huge. I mean, scorched everything.
It makes Bikini Atoll look like summer camp.
Yes. All right. Now, at what point did he start working with Westinghouse?
Well, actually, Westinghouse was way back in the beginning.
Before Morgan?
Oh, yeah. Long before.
Oh, okay.
Westinghouse was actually, for who he was and what he was, Westinghouse was probably the only real friend in the industry that Tesla ever had, because when he went to Tesla about the money situation, he didn't say, I'm not going to pay you. He asked, please help me so I can survive. So it was more of a plea for help. But when Tesla got to New York and then he had his falling out with Edison, he ended up getting some money. And I won't even call it money. He got some work designing super efficient arc lighting for a group of guys that, instead of paying him cash, paid him with stock options, and those options ended up being worthless. So these guys got really great arc lighting out of Tesla without giving him a penny.
Typical, I guess.
I guess these things happened in that time in New York, because that was the center of industry.
Tesla needed a business manager.
Yeah. He would have fared well with that.
Yeah. I mean, all he should have done was invent and worry about it, let the business manager cut the deals.
Right. Well, and it was right after this bad deal with these guys doing the arc lights that he went back to digging ditches. And he ended up, A.K. Brown, a guy that worked for Western Union, came to him because he was familiar with him, and he said, you know, you don't belong out here doing this manual work. And so he helped Tesla come up with the money to fund the Grand Street Laboratory. And then later on, Westinghouse came in and purchased the AC motor patents. That's where the $60,000 came from.
Now, but was it at this laboratory, though, that Tesla was coming up with ideas for radio and robotics and things like that?
Well, the radio thing is actually very interesting, because radio was kind of an accidental discovery. And this is probably one of the few things that Tesla wasn't the very first man out of the gate with.
Right.
And what had happened was he had been looking at some of the works of mathematical models created by a fellow by the name of James Maxwell over in England, and some of the experimentations based on those mathematical models from a German guy by the name of Heinrich Hertz. These two guys together had proved that basically light was electromagnetic radiation, or another form of electricity. And that was the impetus for Tesla to create the Tesla coil. Because by this time, he realized that he wasn't going to be able to do some of the greater things with electricity that he wanted to do with the lower frequencies that he had available to him. So his goal was to come up with high-frequency electricity. He initially tried to build AC generators that would work at much higher rates to produce higher cyclical rates, but they would literally come apart.
And while he's doing that, then he stumbles into radio waves.
Well, what happened was he devised the Tesla coil as a way to create hundreds of thousands of cycles of electricity per second. And what he did is he was able to finally physically observe the departure of these radio waves, and that's where he came up with the idea for the radio, long before our friend Marconi.
But he just never knew how to apply this stuff.
Well, this is one of the situations where he actually was harmed by the system, because he filed his original patents for the basic concept of the radio in, I want to say, 1897, which they were approved in 1900, and Marconi never filed a U.S. patent for radio until November of 1900.
Did Marconi steal Tesla's ideas? I mean, did they know each other?
They were familiar with each other's work.
Yeah.
And Tesla's work was finding its way to Europe.
It seems like everybody maximized themselves on Tesla's brain, and they all took little pieces of it. Marconi, Edison, all of them.
The thing about Marconi, too, is he was a real pompous fellow. He was kind of Italian nobility, so he came from a family of money, and he kind of had that I'm entitled demeanor.
Mm-hmm.
And when one of his assistants said, you must be really upset about the fact that he's, you know, doing this, he's like, oh, let Marconi do what he's doing. He's doing what he's doing with 17 of my patents. So Tesla always kind of had a...
But it didn't bother him. He didn't care.
It didn't bother him until Marconi won the Nobel.
Yes.
And that sent Tesla over the edge.
Literally?
There was a point where he suffered a massive breakdown, and I'm not exactly sure what the exact time frames are, but it is mentioned in several writings. He did eventually fall into a state of mental decay. I mean, aside from the neuroses that he already that he demonstrated around the few friends that he had.
Didn't Tesla go to court to fight some of this?
Well, Tesla initially started to fight the Marconi thing. But what happened was is that Marconi had a lot of money and Tesla didn't. And so even as it is today, money wins in court.
So he squeezed him.
Which is kind of sad, too, because in 43, in October of 43, the U.S. Supreme Court, and this is after, this is either right before or right after he died, the U.S. Supreme Court reinstated Tesla's patents over Marconi. And we all want to kind of stand up and say, hooray for the Supreme Court, but they didn't do it for Tesla. They did it to protect U.S. interests because Marconi was suing the U.S. government because he said that the U.S. government violated some of his patents during World War I.
Well, all the things that Tesla had been coming up with at the time, and there's no question, the guy was genius, and, you know, they grab his papers, who knows where they are today. Do you think we have this beam weapon technology today?
Yes, I do.
Well, how come we're not using it?
Who's to say we're not?
Well, that's true.
I mean, like you said, you know, like you were talking about earlier, who's to say that some of these weather anomalies aren't HARP? Who's to say some of these intense and bizarre earthquakes in places like Pakistan aren't some of the research Tesla did in ultra-low frequency?
Well, I mean, wasn't he also trying to, like, resonate buildings and stuff? And he was working with vibrations and everything like that?
That's really super dark, deep Tesla. As a matter of fact, the movie that we wrote specifically talks about some of these even more fringe ideas that he believed that he could find out what the resonance and the rhythm pattern of every piece of matter around him was. And theoretically, if that was the case, he could materialize or dematerialize those things.
Well, when we come back at the top of the hour, Mark, let's talk a little bit about this film, The Tesla Conspiracy, because as you said, once the papers got stolen, hence the conspiracy began. And how many people do you think were involved with him in terms of selling out? What do you think?
Just about everybody. Just about everybody that ever came into contact with him sold him down the river.
You think they all made money off him?
I think anybody, well, and I'm going to disclaim Westinghouse. I think Westinghouse tried to be a good guy, but in the end, it was still about the money.
All right. Well, when we come back with our guest, of course, Mark DeMuha, we'll talk about the life of Nikola Tesla and, again, this free electricity, this death ray, which I'm just fascinated with the way this thing works. I mean, he really wanted to knock down 10,000 enemy planes at one time. And then, of course, the movie, The Tesla Conspiracy. When can we see it? We'll be right back.